The 1-900 Wrestling Podcast is brought to you, as always, by patreon.com/1900wrestling.
I want you to call me for all of wrestling's latest news and views. I've been involved in wrestling for 35 years, and nobody knows wrestling like me. Remember the number,
1-900-WRESTLING!
Stupid idiots.
They call me Hara!
Can you smell what The Rock is cooking?
And his name is John Cena!
Well, look at this, prima donna!
Thank God Donald Trump's a whole idiot!
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. 1-900 Wrestling here for you, friends. My name, of course, is Justin Robert Young. Joining me, as always, is the man from Austin, Texas, Willie Dills Gregory. Welcome, 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 sir.
The man from Austin, Texas, who still uses Willie Dills SF for his Twitch account. Yes, that is me.
Willie Dills Sci-Fi, of course. you are a big fan. Thank you to everybody, and of course, everybody who is watching us live right here at twitch.tv/JustinRYoung. Got partnered last week, so thank you to everybody who has subscribed, including the Buck, who just did it right here now. So. We're going to get into everything. What I'm obsessed with this week is hopeless heel turns. And by the way, I've got one that if there would have been just a slight twist in the universe, we would have had maybe the most despicable heel turn in pop culture history. And yeah. we will get to that when we get to the segment.
Are you talking about the heel turn of Moonlight?
Don't even say it. Don't even say it. Don't even speculate. I'm going to set it up.
All right. I'm actually echoing a little bit. I don't know if you know this, but
what was that?
Just FYI, I'm echoing back through Skype.
We've
got a new setup going here today, so
yeah, no, it's not coming on my end, so it'll all hopefully right. Filter out. All right, let's get into the week in wrestling. We have so much going on, but as you pointed out in the pre-show, you know, this is we actually have a week where there wasn't a pay-per-view, so that's
well, yeah,
that's
it was
shocking.
Weird, right? The timing, because there was like 2 weeks after the Rumble, where we went right into Elimination Chamber, right?
Yeah.
And then now it's 3 weeks between that and Fastlane, and then there's like a full month where we're just leading up to WrestleMania. Essentially.
Yeah. And now SmackDown.
Maybe that's because of the short month of February kind of screws with things a little bit. But
yeah.
it felt to me last night on Sunday that it should have been Fastlane. Like I was like in my brain, I was thinking, oh, Fastlane's on tonight, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, it's not on at all.
Week.
Like, what am I doing? I made my cheesecake. I was ready. No, I didn't do any of that.
You were in full pay-per-view form, right?
Yes. But no, I had to remind myself, no, it's not tonight. We got one more week because it did feel like everything that had happened in the previous week, like Fastlane is essentially set up, right? There's not much needed this week as far as Raw is concerned to get us there.
Well, you know, you have the return of Seth Rollins tonight.
That's true. But so, that's really setting up a WrestleMania, not really doing much, unless something changes, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we might know the matches for WrestleMania, theoretically. Especially on SmackDown, it seems like a lot of the rumors seem to be working their way into fruition.
Sure.
Although the one big rumor, which has inexplicably been there since the very beginnings of the dirt sheet wondering on what's going to happen at WrestleMania, was Big Show versus Shaq. You figured, why the hell is the Big Show in the main event in the Los Angeles Staples Center? No Shaq. So who knows whether or not that thing's going to be happening. It looks like Shaq is too busy in a hot feud with the Golden State Warriors PR department and possibly
that's right. He's actually right now. Shaq had a heel turn in my mind right now. So the show is definitely the face. I mean, Gotta stop picking on my boy JaVale McGee, man.
And you know, God bless anybody who has to earnestly root for JaVale McGee. He's done a very good job for a team, but let's be honest, he doesn't like all he has to do is not slip into a pie and have his pants fall down, and he's gonna be playing good minutes.
But he
for the
added
Warriors.
A much needed dynamic of a big all guy right. that Steph Curry can throw the ball into the air.
He added a much needed
home, right?
dynamic of somebody at his height that would play at that salary level.
That would soak up 8 to 9 minutes a game.
It's like, hey, would you like to be paid $25 to play basketball? And he's like, sure. It's more.
Yeah. Oh, am I going to get a championship at the end?
Yeah.
Likely. All right.
Quite
I'll
possibly.
Do it.
Let's roll the dice here. So yeah. No Shaq. But the question that I have is, because again, we saw on Raw kind of these soft bonds being formed, right?
Sure.
Triple H talks to Kevin Owens before the Festival of Friendship. Kevin Owens goes crazy on Chris Jericho, right? Triple H arriving to the arena with Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe destroying Sami Zayn right before the Kevin Owens match. Do you think we are going to go into WrestleMania with that being a faction?
The Samoa Joe, Triple H,
Samoa
Kevin
Joe,
Owens?
Yeah. The like, you know, like, who says I'm a body guy faction from Triple H? It's just going to
be
okay.
him. Kevin Owens, obviously, and Triple H have this history now where Triple H essentially gifted him the Universal Championship in the first place,
yep.
right? So
yep.
Obviously there is some reason for him to show loyalty to Triple H, and they've basically done nothing with that storyline since because the best friends thing was so hot, right?
Yeah.
But now the best friends thing is over. If and a lot of people think that this was going to happen, if Goldberg destroys Kevin Owens at Fastlane,
yeah,
which I, you know, if you're going to build Goldberg this much and then suddenly have Kevin Owens beat him before WrestleMania, that seems a little odd. So sure, and then Kevin Owens is like frantically trying to find his footing again. Definitely would turn to a man he does not fully understand, right? In Triple H's Samoa Joe. I think that could definitely be a thing, and I'd be all for it, especially if it ends up they're just beating the hell out of Chris Jericho all the time.
Well,
Sami Zayn starts to team up with Jericho. You got that Canadian connection. You could do all sorts of stuff.
You know,
with that.
Here's my question, because the more we're leading into this, the more it feels like that Fastlane main event is not going to be a squash, but rather just this supernova that sets up immediately four WrestleMania matches.
Sure.
Right.
Well, okay, how about this? I mean, if you want to still keep Goldberg looking strong, which is obviously something that you want to do, then it doesn't have to be a clean finish. You can have Samoa Joe and Triple H get involved, right? And then obviously that would allow Kevin Owens to retain if that's what you wanted to go for, or it could be super Goldberg getting all taking out everybody and still managing to pull it off somehow.
Because
there's
here's
all sorts
the, here's
of ways
the other
that
thing.
You could use this to lead into many things.
How many 15-minute matches does Bill Goldberg have in him currently? Like, if you were to autopsy Bill Goldberg and you opened him up like Operation and peeled him back, I think you might have one, right?
Well, this doesn't have to be one where he does a lot, because he could
that's why
chase
I'm saying,
Kevin Owens for a while.
That's why I'm saying
take a beating from multiple people.
Yeah,
and then get up, do a couple spears and one jackhammer, right?
I would not be shocked, A, if this week that match becomes a no disqualification match.
Okay.
And I would not be shocked if up to and including the following people at some point make themselves seen and interfere in this match. Brock Lesnar.
Mm,
Seth
yeah.
Rollins. Chris Jericho, Samoa Joe, and Sami Zayn.
It essentially turns into like a mini rumble where everyone's just down there.
I just have this, I have a premonition.
Okay.
That it's going to be one of those matches where just when you think the other side has the upper hand, somebody else, it's going to be one of those WCW Nitro, like NWO era main events. Where obviously the NWO has a billion people there. And so now it's like, all the Steiner brothers are coming out. Oh, yeah, DDP's sure. coming out. Oh, like, yep. like, oh, the Disco Inferno's coming out. Like, just that little ante up. And then maybe the final straw that breaks the camel's back and costs Kevin Owens the championship is Chris Jericho. And that sets up.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So Chris Jericho, the last man down to the ring, finally, you know, hits Kevin Owens with like the Lion Salt or something like that, yeah. setting up. Yeah. Okay. I'm on board, man. I think you could be right. None of these people are doing anything at Fastlane as of now. So,
well, Samoa Joe and Sami Zayn are in a match, right?
There's nothing listed for them.
Nothing listed?
No, like currently what's listed, if you go to the Wikipedia, is Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, Kevin Owens, Goldberg, and I'm not even sure how they're having Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman listed over Kevin Owens, Goldberg right now, but that's apparently what's happening. Yeah. Neville, Jack Gallagher, the gentleman.
The extraordinary gentleman.
Yes, Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson, Enzo Amore, big cast for the Tag Team Championship, and Bayley and Charlotte Flair. That's it. That's all that's on there right now. Officially listed.
I have no idea whether or not, you know, I don't know. That women's match is something interesting.
Because there's a lot on the line as far as, like, the whole Charlotte pay-per-view streak and stuff like that.
So you need to keep that intact, right?
Sure.
Because that would seem to be the big thing, like, if they're making that out to be more important than the title because they moved the title on Raw.
Yes. And obviously, Charlotte can be defeated, as we've seen her defeated in many Raws, right?
Yes.
She continues to find ways to lose there, but cannot lose at a pay-per-view. And they talk about it every single time now.
Yes.
They talk about it even when she loses. Well, can they beat her at a pay-per-view, right?
Exactly. Which is fine. I think that's its own storyline, and you want to pop the crowd and legitimize Bayley. I think we're going to look back on this year with those three specifically, and also on SmackDown, and just see this is a very deliberate effort to legitimize as many women as possible in a very short period of time.
By the way, it's someone in chat, the Reverend Puck, Charlotte unbeatable on Sundays, completely beatable on Mondays. She just needs to, it's the Alexa Bliss thing. She just needs to make sure she's getting the right amount of sleep, right?
Exactly.
There's something going on Sundays.
It's a serious problem. All right,
it's
so
the
let's
cartoons
go
in the morning or something that she can't replicate on Mondays. So I have to figure that one out.
Let's go through some of the stuff that happened this week in a segment. I'm going to get the sounder for this because I'm obsessed with the pay-per-view songs that they choose and how sometimes they're great and sometimes they're terrible.
Sure.
And we were in an Uber over the weekend going to this party, and they had like the Sirius XM Hits 1 channel on.
Mm-hmm.
And they played the current WrestleMania a theme, the Pitbull Flo Rida, like red light, green light.
It's Flo Rida again, isn't it? I just thought about that. Is this like his fourth? Flo Rida is like the indisputable champion of WrestleMania theme songs at this point.
Dude, I think, yeah, oh, totally. I mean, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
he's going in one day.
There's no doubt that Flo Rida is going in the WWE Hall of Fame. That is a mortal lock, absolutely. So here, let's go ahead and play a little game of red light, green light with all the things that happened throughout this week. The KO promo that opened Raw. No muss, no fuss. It's just Kevin Owens, center of the ring.
No entrance. Just open up. He's sitting in a chair in the middle of the ring. It was dope.
Green light or red light? Red light or green light?
Oh, I'm green lighting this, man.
Green light. Oh,
this
my
thing
God.
This thing was awesome. Plus, it built not only the forthcoming feud with Chris Jericho in a huge way. Like,
yeah.
It was just a massive step in the direction of that. But it got me really excited for the Goldberg match because suddenly it was like Kevin Owens' game face was on, right?
Yeah.
And maybe this was kind of, if you were trying to kayfabe, find the reason for what he did to Chris Jericho, it was that he needed, like, he realized that Goldberg is coming.
Yeah.
I got to start taking this S seriously, right? Like, there's no more time for scarves and dancing girls.
Yeah.
No, I got to be, I got game face on. I'm trying to squash a quote unquote superhero. And I love that he went down that line with this promo where it was Goldberg, you came back to prove to your kids that there were superheroes. Well, I'm going to prove to everyone that there are no superheroes. It was amazing. Fantastic stuff. Seeing Kevin Owens back at his like completely just violent, disturbed individual who is just chip on the shoulder. I loved it. I was all aboard.
So here's the thing that I think I love the most just thinking about this match, and he set it up so well in that promo, is that Kevin Owens is going to wrestle Bill Goldberg the way that you would play against Bill Goldberg in a video game.
Like if Goldberg is a final boss, yeah, you can't just go at him, right? You got to run circles around him and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's going to powder out of the ring. Whenever he sees him setting up for the spear, he's going to lay down, right?
Yep.
Like it's one of those things that I'm so excited. When you look at somebody like Goldberg and how does he react to newer talent, the newer talent is like, yeah, I watched you your entire career, dude. I know exactly what happens. You come in for the spear. You go for the jackhammer. That's it. Everybody's stupid, and they walk up to you thinking that they're going to be, like, stronger than you. Turns out they're not. You have the magic touch. I'm not going to touch you. I'm going to run around the ring until you get tired, and then I'm going to hit you with a chair.
He's going to continue to go out to the edges and pick up power-ups and health pots, and
he's going to win the match.
That's his thinking, right?
And that was great. And really, I think you're right. This was the step beyond, hey, I'm happy to see Kevin Owens. He's on TV. This is Kevin Owens in the way that he eventually got there, or got there very, very fast with NXT, rather. He's now there with WWE to be like, no, don't cheer for me. If you cheer for me, you're an idiot, and you're being stupid because I hate you, and you shouldn't like me.
And a lot of R Squared Circle people were really upset with the whole best friends run of Kevin Owens because he looked like the chicken shit heel, right? The guy who never could win on his own and always needed his buddy. And they were like, you're making him look weak. But to me, the payoff on all that is huge. And so it's like you can't. That's one of the sit down, Mark. Like it's one of those things where. Throughout that run, you can't just look at it in a vacuum. Like, this is all that matters is what happened this week, right? What matters is what can happen now in 2 months. And right now, Kevin Owens looks as strong as he's looked in his like since beating John Cena clean in match number one, right?
Yeah.
And even more intimidating. So, dude, this is everything that's happened before is building up to this moment, and it's fantastic. I'm all for it.
All right.
Green light.
You mentioned it before. They are going for the tag team championships, being held by the Bullet Club. Enzo and Cass being your number one contenders. Red light, green light.
I mean, listen, I'm going to red light this one just because Enzo and Cass are not going to win. And it makes me sad, but it also it's also completely understandable. It was nice to have them have that victory, but these guys are perennial number one contenders, right?
Yeah.
And never, ever actual champions.
Because they've never needed it. You know, that what I hope.
They don't need it. You're right.
Yeah.
They don't.
What I hope that does not happen to Enzo and Cass, which I think at times, you know, the WWE having faith in you being able to carry a segment can be a gift and a curse.
Sure.
Because you get to go out there and kind of say what you want, but oftentimes that's enough rope to hang yourself. And that's kind of the purgatory that Bray Wyatt was in, where it was like, all right, so match up all these pieces. Well, what are the remainders? Oh, Dean Ambrose. Bray. Bray will do it. You know, just throw him in. He's going to say, like, Dean Ambrose, man, you're just a never done. And it's like, all right, cool. We knocked out a segment.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing with Enzo and Cass now, where it's like, and this, by the way, I'm going to go ahead and say red light even to the fact that they never got that pop in NXT. In NXT, they were also the, like, always the bridesmaid, never a bride.
Yeah, they were never champions in NXT either. And they came up basically after a long period of not even contending. Like, they weren't even in the tag team picture, really. They were just at that point they were like Carmella's valets, right? Like they had moved in, big cast would come out and do, but I think they were also like kind of packaging them a little bit more at that point, right? Big cast was still working on his body. They were like, we realize what we have here, that they could get a huge pop no matter what. And then, of course, you see them now, like they've got the special mics and everything is basically about the promos and less about the wrestling for them. So they're essentially being used here as the perfect tag team that you can kind of feed to the club right now, right? You're not hurting them necessarily.
No.
And then, of course, like I said, nothing exists in a vacuum. We can now go a year and a half down the road and Cass could have the biggest heel turn ever when he turns on Enzo, right?
Like that. Oh, geez, stop it. Stop it. All right, here we go. Bronx.
I just broke hearts. I know. I'm sorry.
I know. You're killing me. By the way, go ahead and I believe it is the With Spandex blog, the Uproxx pro wrestling blog. But I think Danielle Matheson is the writer there. She did a great piece where she cast professional wrestlers into police procedurals. And there was a Enzo and Cass as Law and Order SVU.
Nice.
And just the idea of, and then, like, I think she retweeted something on Twitter where it was just the picture of them like in suits and ties, like their WWE promo photo, but you know, their faces on suits and ties. And it just says, what do we have here? A cup of murders? A cup of murders?
Oh my God.
All right,
God.
Here we go. Big Show versus Braun Strowman in a reinforced ring for the main event. Red light, green light.
I'm green lighting this all day, dude. That was a fun match. And I was a little concerned because the big man versus the big man matches are not often my favorites.
No.
Because there's not a lot you can really do in them, right? You can have a lot of feats of strength, but this was, I mean, these two guys went. It was
chain wrestling.
It was, yeah, some chain wrestling, and I was like, okay, what are they going to do? Everybody was really impressed, obviously, with the kip-up, and then you got a couple of haters who came in and were like, well, Big Show pulled him up, and that's how it works. It's like, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how he did it. You know,
you matters. Go ahead and try to move that kind of weight.
Exactly.
Even if somebody is
what
helping.
Matters is that both of these guys put on an amazing match for this. Big Show impressed the hell out of me. His mobility is clearly back at his advanced age as far as a wrestler is concerned. And Braun Strowman going over and having, you know, powering now the body slam or whatever on Big Show twice.
Yeah.
Really, really cool stuff. So I enjoy, and they made a big show about reinforcing the ring and all that, which was really just a bunch of guys came out and pretended to screw things for a while. But, you know, all of that really added to the whole thing for me. So I freaking loved it. And the whole night I'm watching it and they keep talking about this main event coming up. I'm like, okay, that might suck. And then I was just immediately on board at the very beginning. It was awesome. So Strowman is the future, man, of big men in this company.
I thought this
sure.
was great. But hold on. I'm going to use my time here on this segment of Red Light, Green Light to just talk about physical fitness in the WWE in general, because it feels like everybody on the roster might be in the best shape of their career. And, like, I don't know whether – like, it just seems insane. Like that there is just – I guess, like, now it's really, really cool to be in shredded shape on the roster. Not to say that there was ever a time, I mean, professional wrestling has had its share of pot bellies, right? But even even like Kevin Owens and Bray Wyatt, like, don't seem to necessarily be in bad shape. You know, they have a different body type.
They have a different body type, but they never look tired in the ring, or like they can go for 35 minutes no problem and they're still good, right? Impressive in itself. But you know what I think there might be here? Little bit is I think that at this point, sports science and medicine has gotten really advanced.
Yeah.
Right. And we're less about the wrestlers taking it upon themselves to go out and get the stuff that they need to continue to have shredded bodies while they work 300 days a year. And probably a little bit more of a sports nutritionist and a doctor. You know, doing things in a much safer and better way.
Yeah.
And I don't want to encourage any kids out there to use substances that are bad for their long-term health. But more and more, it's kind of being proven that if done correctly, you could kind of Keith Richards the situation, right? And live forever while still doing something that's not supposedly good for you. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, listen. Here's all I'm going to say on the subject. If everybody, for all the like steroids, if everybody in the 80s and 90s, all those wrestlers did more steroids than they did and also did nothing but drink 4 gallons of water and eat clean proteins and go to bed at 8 o'clock, they'd all still be alive.
No, but they were also mixing in the cocaine and the whiskey.
There was a lot of fast living by all those guys that wound up dropping dead. So I think that's
it was a different time, you know? Hey,
by the way, did you see the guy at the Royal Rumble bar, the bar we went to right after the Royal Rumble, that was in a Seth Rollins t-shirt? And I was talking to him. Did you meet this guy?
I don't remember specifically this person.
It's a big, tall, good-looking guy. And we all wound up talking to him and his friend a little bit. And I'm like, his friend goes, oh, this is his first wrestling event. I'm like, oh, what an amazing wrestling event. But you have a Seth Rollins shirt on. He's like, yeah, I'm a big fan of his. And I'm like, oh, so you just never been to a live event before? He's like, no, I'm a big fan of his CrossFit.
Okay.
He's a fan of his CrossFit, and he just went to go support a CrossFit celebrity in his day job because he was such a big fan of how well Seth Rollins CrossFits.
But this is just the evolution of sports in general, right? Yeah. And now sports entertainment following suit, where these guys are athletes, and that now you're seeing, like, I'm sure that if you talked CrossFit to Bruno Sammartino, he'd be like, I don't know what the hell that is. I just go into the ring and I do my thing. I'm just a massive dude. That's what I do. But now it's all about, you know, the DDP yoga is the thing now. And the wrestlers are starting to understand what this does to their body and how you can best combat it to be healthier and later in life. Like, I don't want to dwell on bad things that have happened in the past, but a lot of times it was just like human growth hormone, right? That was used for a lot of things. And that stuff is definitely not good for you.
Some might say the big boy never left.
But what I'm saying is, like, there's other options that are a lot healthier, right?
By the way, if you like any action movie that you've gone to see in the theaters, you like HGH. HGH is something that is very prevalent in a lot of different elements of our entertainment diet.
But it's like if you look at like Jose Canseco in baseball in the 80s, like he was going off and doing it on his own, right? And you don't know what you're getting and you're ordering it from Mexico
Before the designer stuff, before the cream and the clear and everything.
Exactly. And now you can go to some like building in Colma and there's a scientist working on making this stuff happen instead of essentially like a meth lab, right, that's making this stuff. So it's changed a lot. That's all I'm going to say. Changed a lot.
All right.
And the culture has changed.
Red light, green light. Naomi relinquishing her SmackDown women's title only less than 2 weeks after winning it at the pay-per-view.
Now, I'd red light the Naomi, but then I'm going to green light the fact that Alexa Bliss got it back. And I was thinking that there's no way that they're going to have her win it again, especially when Becky Lynch came out. But Swerve, Alexa Bliss, once again.
So apparently that's a legit injury. Like she's definitely that they just hoped it was more of a tweak than a.
What do you mean, Naomi's? Yeah,
Naomi's is.
The plan all along was hometown WrestleMania match, but yeah, she's out. So, but I just, you know, look, I'm sad for Naomi. I'm happy for my girl Alexa Bliss though.
Do you see
as the champion?
My new favorite thing on Talking Smack is Becky Lynch trying to work around calling people the C word.
Like it's so natural, right? It's part of her vocabulary, but she can't.
Hit Alexa Bliss on a previous episode with a "See you next Tuesday," and then she called her Alexa Bliss. She said, "You know, no matter what you are." You are the C word, a cheater.
I didn't catch that. That's actually pretty good. I think I was half paying attention during Talking Smack this week, but nice.
No. Great job.
Pushing the boundaries while staying PG. I like it.
You know, I'm really curious as to see where they go with this, because I think that that very much takes a big Jenga piece out of what they wanted to do. I will say, though, the women on SmackDown, man, great work. Great work all around. Like that opening segment, although unexpected and certainly probably going to be damaging to what they wanted to do at WrestleMania, was tear-jerking. I continue to love that Brie Bella Naomi. Like, that match that they had was great. That was brutal.
And that, I didn't put it in here, but that match also, that's starting to go down the line of making the whole Nikki Bella and John Cena versus The Miz and Maryse thing. Like, I think something that the people will get behind. Because right now, a lot of people are going, what? That's the match? Which, again, sit down, Marks. It's going to be awesome. So, and this was really pushing it in that direction, right? You had Maryse come out using a pipe.
Yeah,
To beat down Nikki
a very
Bella.
Light
it was
pipe.
Great.
It was apparently one of those fiberglass, you know, those new fiberglass pipes. It's very, very light in the way that
sure.
she's moving it. But no, I'm curious to see where they go, because I think Naomi was a kind of refreshing injection into that title picture feud. Now that we kind of have, you know, Becky and Alexa and Mickie James.
I mean, right now the thing is that Talia and Nikki doing their own thing works really well for everyone else, because those are kind of the last remaining diva era people in there, right? And everybody else is kind of these fresh faces right now, other than Naomi, who rebranded herself to essentially move out of that, right? So I think, yeah, they're really handling it in the right way. And then you can move Nikki if she continues. I'm not sure. Like, I've heard rumors she's about to call it quits, right? But...
Well,
you can kind of move them in and out if it makes sense, when it makes sense.
That's the dirt sheet.
Keep them a little separate right now means that they're not hurting each other, and they're not hurting the rest of the women who are kind of doing things that they haven't ever done in the past. So,
all right. Red light, green light, Harper versus Styles. They draw in the Battle Royale, and now it is a number one contenders match to headline next week's SmackDown.
This was really cool for me, just to see Luke Harper be kind of going toe-to-toe with AJ Styles. I think he's really built up right now in a real way.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, the other people who are in, you know, Mojo Rawley, Kalisto, Ziggler,
Dean,
Miz,
John Cena,
Baron Corbin, John Cena.
Yeah.
And I think Apollo Crews. So all of a sudden, Apollo Crews is now, like, with the big boys, right?
Yep.
Which is kind of cool. Maybe that makes him a little more interesting. Oh, and Dean Ambrose.
Yep.
And then you come down to Luke Harper and AJ Styles. So obviously, like, AJ is still kind of the top of the heap. But that's a really tricky. I'm always impressed when they pull this off. And obviously, the camera angle, I wasn't there live, so I didn't see their feet. But it's always really impressive to me when they can go with a finish like that and then pull it off, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, what was the one where they were in, like, the steel cage, and then on the opposite sides, they, like, both hit the ground.
Yeah, that
at the
was
same time.
Hogan
was,
like, and ago. Somebody else, right?
Yeah, this was years ago. But, yeah. I mean, that stuff is so tricky, and I'm always really impressed at the coordination that these guys can do. After, you know, wrestling for 30 minutes or whatever, taking many blows to the head and lots of bumps, and then still understanding and being in the right place at the right time at the end of the match to do a finish like this. It was really cool to see. I liked it. I'm curious to see how much Luke Harper can really go here and get pushed with the big boys. It's awesome. I've always liked him.
I mean, number one, just a trademark Monday Nitro main event, right? Like,
oh, hell,
you know, if Monday Nitro was still a thing, that would be the main Luke Harper versus AJ Styles. Like, it just feels big man. They both kind of look half country. Like, you know, it is. It is awesome. I think it's gonna be great. Obviously, that finish was a little bit hinky, but I thought the battle royale was excellently plotted out. And
yeah,
you know, hell, it gets us a fresh match, something we haven't seen before.
No, we've not seen these two go at it, and yeah, and I agree too. Like, the kind of the ordering of everything, they made people look strong. Miz is kind of in the mode where apparently he will bust out a sweet heel situation for a while, take advantage of some stuff, and then get one move hit on him, and he's out. But that's fine. I like it. I like Miz being where he is. All of it, I think, was really well done. And a lot of stuff is set up, and people are kind of, like filtering into their spots now for where WrestleMania is gonna matter for them a lot. So well, yeah,
and,
it's
and you know the thing is, and what I like, if you want to show, everyone's like, ah, well, why do people like SmackDown more than Raw? Why do people like SmackDown more than Raw? Here's the one thing that SmackDown seems to have committed to. Let's just give you fresh matchups whenever we can. And if there is a frustration, and we do try to stay away from obviously understanding that there's going to be crappy elements of your weekly wrestling programming, and we try to stay away from it to focus on the stuff that we really like. But I don't have a problem with the club, you know, losing to Roman Reigns or having to resort to cheating to end the match. I'm glad they didn't eat a pin. But the one thing that is frustrating is just watching that exact same match 2 weeks
yeah,
in a row.
Yeah, for like a month straight before a pay-per-view where you watch it again, only it's a little bit longer, yeah. Right? That's the formula that we don't like, right?
And it's like, hey, look, was that crowd as hot at the end of that Battle Royal for Luke AJ as maybe they would have been for AJ Cena? No. It was a little lighter on the reaction, but you want
I mean,
to know
maybe,
what?
But at that point, Luke and AJ had done amazing things in the match already, right? So I don't like. Yes,
well,
you are right. Like,
if
obviously
it
comes down
reason.
To AJ Cena, that is so built up after their yeah. trilogy, right? Which people are literally calling it a trilogy at this point. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I just also think you can take a guy like Luke Harper and kind of properly book a match
yeah.
to where he then gets the reaction that he should get.
And I think they are on the road to doing it. I think yes. that this is how you get there. So for me.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with the level of booking in SmackDown in general with a smaller roster. It's got to be a tricky job to put those puzzle pieces together in a fresh feeling way every single week. And yet somehow I'm still excited to tune in and see what's going on there. Right. Whereas with Raw, I'm just kind of like, I'm excited about Kevin Owens, so I'm going to tune in for that. And it's less about the entire roster, right? So it's something that they've been doing a masterful job of for sure.
All right, let's get into the bit. Despicable heel turns. Let me explain why this is on my mind.
I loved your example, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is true. That's a hopeless heel turn, right? That if you're on the opposite end of that, hopelessness is the feeling.
Yes. So here's the deal.
Go ahead and explain, and then we'll tell people what that example was to kind of really drive home what we're going for here.
So just a real quick setup. Actually, let me ask you a question, Dills. Have you ever in your life as a resident and born and raised in San Francisco.
Sure.
Have you seen a wrestling event in the Cow Palace?
I did. The first time I ever went to see wrestling was in the Cow Palace. It was a WWE event. I could barely remember the matches, but I do remember it distinctly. Big Boss Man.
Uh-huh.
And I believe Hulk Hogan was the main event. And this was, I don't think this was like a Raw or anything like that. This was like one of those
house show, yeah.
Main event house show type things, yeah. And I went with a friend and his parent. And I was really little. And so it's like, all I can really remember is that was the main event. And I really liked Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Right. And that's basically, that was the first time I ever, and the last time I ever went to wrestling at the Cow Palace. Other than that, I went to like a rave at the Cow Palace one time, and then I went to like a gun show or something ridiculous.
The Cow Palace is one of those. Just the name. Growing up in Florida,
yeah,
I always just loved whenever, because I was for whatever reason Nitro WCW would put it on TV more, like they would do big pay per views there or Nitros and stuff there.
We should try to explain like what the Cow Palace is though, because if you live in San Francisco. You obviously have, like, you had, back in the day, like, the Giants played at Candlestick Park,
yeah.
And so did the 49ers, right? That's, like, this huge place. And then, obviously, like, downtown, there's big buildings and there's venues, like, Bill Grant Presents was always, like, a big venue at the Civic Center Auditorium. So you had that place. You had, like, the Fillmore, big place, right? But as far as, like, just a giant building where stuff could happen, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
There was the Cow Palace. However, it was like, so the Geneva Street is this street that you just don't go onto unless you're going specifically to somewhere like the Cow Palace. It's surrounded by just like nothing.
Nothing.
But just ghettos and just weird pockets of industrial stuff. And it's just out in the middle of nowhere. Literally, and it just only feels like it's going to fall apart at any moment, to be honest.
It is only technically in San Francisco. I think the far edge of their parking lot is
one time I got a ticket next to the Cow Palace, but I was pulled over by Colma police.
Oh, really?
And they pulled me over, like, and then I drove, like, into the city limits, and the guy, like, apparently had to let me go or something because I was in San Francisco officially. It was this weird situation, yeah. And I was like, all right, whatever, man. But I was right by the, like, I remember distinctly. I was like, well, I know I'm by the Cow Palace. So, yeah, you're right. It's, like, right on the edge.
It is, yeah. I think it is technically in Daly City. So, All Pro Wrestling, one of the big independents out here in the Bay Area, is going to run the Cow Palace on May 6th.
Really?
Yeah, one of the big matches is Joey Ryan versus Cody Rhodes in a steel cage, which you fairly rarely get to see for independent shows. So they're pulling out all the gimmicks. John Morrison's going to be there. They're still announcing stuff. Very, very excited. But it got me thinking about the Cow Palace. And I looked up the biggest WCW matches in the Cow Palace, including Super Brawl 97, Hogan versus Piper was the main event.
Okay.
Which
that's a
got
match.
Me thinking about an episode of Nitro that I had not seen since I saw it live. And that is the night that Eric Bischoff joined the NWO. And I remember it like it was yesterday before I rewatched it. It was this confrontation because the big storyline had been that, they built it up kind of more like a boxing match. Like it was, hey, we know this is the fight that you want to see, but much like we're dealing with right now with Conor McGregor and Mayweather, it's just like, yeah, a lot of agents, a lot of people talking money. You know, sometimes these things come together, sometimes they don't. And so all of a sudden, it's the end of Nitro. Eric Bischoff is in the ring as the head of WCW, and he's like, hey, look, guys, I tried to make it work, but Piper won't call us back, won't show up. Piper hits the ring, reveals Eric Bischoff to be a fraud. NWO comes out, kicks the living hell out of Piper, which was the first time that as a youth, I just felt helpless with a heel turn. Like, that was it. The world was dark. It was over. There, we were never coming back from that. WCW was finished. Eric Bischoff was the guy. He was the one marshaling the resources. He was the one who was standing up to them. And now, all of a sudden, he was revealed to be a traitorous rat snake. And so that's what I wanted to talk about, both in real life and in the ring. Traitorous, treacherous, hopeless heel turns.
All right, I'm on board.
All right.
So
that would be my first one.
That would be your... Okay, so I'm going to go with a wrestling one here.
Right.
And I'm going to go with, obviously, the other biggest one, I think, for most people. And that's the guy I grew up being the hugest fan of as a little kid. He was my Goldberg growing up, right?
Yep.
And that, of course, is Hulk Hogan. So how can you talk about these without talking about Hulk Hogan and his heel turn going and creating the NWO in the first damn place, essentially?
Yep.
I mean, that was the first time they actually uttered those words, right?
You can call us the New World Order, brother.
Exactly. And not only that, but he, like, everything about him was suddenly, that was when he was, like, pulling the belt off and smacking people with it and all this stuff. And that was, like, I was still very much kind of like a childlike fan of wrestling.
Yeah.
So that was, like, the first time where I was just, like, crushed. Like, emotionally crushed that Hulk Hogan would turn. Like, Hulk Hogan doesn't turn.
No.
He's the hero, right? He's always been the hero. And suddenly, you know, even when he had, like, matches against, because I actually was more of an Ultimate Warrior fan for, like, that early part of my wrestling fandom. So, but that was, like, still, like, face versus face. You liked both of them, right? He didn't have to ever be a heel to have, like, these great matches with other faces. It was just exciting to watch that happen. And then, of course, like, Andre the Giant turned heel, not Hogan. It was the Giant who did that, right? So Hulk Hogan would never turn heel. And not only did he turn heel, but he turned, like, the worst kind of heel, right? hated the fans all of a sudden, just turned on everybody in wrestling, became the guy who just mercilessly beat people down. And yeah, I was crushed, man. I was like, I don't know if I want to watch wrestling anymore after this.
But sad.
Then, of course, I, you know, a week later, I was like,
of course,
it
was the most amazing thing ever, because, you know, our tragedy is indeed our comedy when it comes to wrestling.
But that was also like the first time in wrestling where, like, I think I really remembered like a guy who was a good guy becoming a bad guy in such a huge way. Right. Like before that, bad guys were kind of always bad guys to me. It felt like.
Yeah.
It was very rare that like you didn't like, you know, Roddy Piper is a great example. You didn't like him one day and then suddenly dislike him the next. And of course he did work heel plenty of times in his career, but like, I just kind of always liked the guys I liked, and I always hated the guys I hated. And all of a sudden it was like, now I hate the guy that I loved the most.
All right.
How does this work? Right. So how do I trust anything ever again?
This is kind of, I invented the game. I'm going to break the game right now, because this is something that did not happen, but I'm just going to twist reality 5 degrees and explain to you how the Oscars could have executed the greatest heel move of all time, right? So yeah. I don't know how many people watched at the end of the Oscars last night. The big two movies that people thought had a chance at winning Best Picture was La La Land and Moonlight. La La Land, big budget, big action stars, white people, songs.
White people, exactly.
You know, like, it's a big frothy love letter to Hollywood itself, which normally is rewarded very, very much.
And the Oscars is Hollywood celebrating Hollywood.
It's
right?
Hollywood. So here's a movie about all that, right?
Yes.
Moonlight, quiet, independent film about a young black guy in Miami coming to terms with the fact that he's gay and realizing how to survive, not only in his own world, but also becoming true to himself. Quiet, small, black people are in it. So now what happened was Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway screw up and say La La Land when they're supposed to say Moonlight by way of a misplaced envelope. La La Land comes up on stage. They got to yank the award away from La La Land, give it to Moonlight.
That was the thing, though, is that they actually all went up on stage, right?
The dude,
and started giving speeches.
But imagine if you will, it was the other way around.
Ooh.
And Moonlight got announced. Everybody's cheering. Everybody's there. And Barry Jenkins is halfway
through.
Cut to
every black person in the audience finally having like the moment, right?
Oh my God. Finally, we've done it. And then they got to come up on stage and say, no, 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 no. The frothy white musical beat you guys. Oops. If you dusty finished the Moonlight's Oscar, that would have been the biggest. I don't know if black people would even want to be in movies anymore. I feel like it would just
make our own kind of version of, we're gonna have Bollywood, Hollywood,
whatever,
and then like
you cannot be trusted. You cannot
exactly.
be trusted.
We're
if
done.
You, if you destroyed our emotions, it would have been the biggest heel turn in the history of awards, movies, and race relations. That would have been it.
That would have been, I see it too. It actually, and then going the other way around, La La Land looks strong, even though Moonlight went over in
it
the
does.
End, right?
It takes the L, it takes the pin, but you want to know what? Like Chazelle won Best Director, Emma Stone won for Actress. It's fine. Nobody weep for La La Land.
No. Yeah, everybody was like, they're going to be just fine. Don't you worry about it. Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. That would have been, Warren Beatty comes out with a steel chair. Just...
Oh, dude, yeah. Warren Beatty just starts stunning everybody.
Oh, God. All right. I felt bad for Warren Beatty because it clearly wasn't his fault. He got handed the wrong envelope, and he even was trying to, like, not read it.
Well, yeah, no, Faye Dunaway is just like, it's like.
Well, she didn't know what to do because she probably didn't even look at the whole card, right?
Yeah, he's showing it to her to be like, "Hey, this is wrong, right?
Does this look right to you?" And she goes, "La La Land." You're like, God damn it.
Faye.
God damn it, Faye.
All right. You anywhere. Do you got one outside the ring?
Okay. Let me give you the last one inside the ring, and then I'm going to finish it off with my true life one. All right.
There we go.
So this is my last, like, inside the ring turn that really affected me, and that was, of course, Christian turning on on Edge.
Yeah.
Because this was – so I can kind of, like, compare this a little bit to, like, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn when they first came up in NXT, except I already knew that this storyline had happened on the indies, essentially, right? Yeah. So knowing that that had already happened, like, lessened that blow a little bit for me. But that was like kind of a similar moment of like congratulating on a big moment, right? Because at this, it was Edge winning. I think it was King of the Ring or something like that. It was some huge. I can't remember like the details of the actual like match and what happened. But Edge had just won, and essentially like Christian comes out to like congratulate and has to like fend off the guy who Edge had just beat, and then he's congratulating his. You know, friend that they'd come up together. They were actually real life childhood friends who both had a love of wrestling and came up and found their way in. And obviously Christian had always been the Jannetty.
Yes.
Right? If you want to be real. And I wasn't really like a fan of either of them individually so much, but them as a tag team was so epic, right? Because they were like, you know, they won that huge ladder match.
Yeah,
first TLC. Did a bunch more of those with the Hardy Boys and all that stuff. Like, they were, as a tag team, they were the best, right? They were hilarious. Everything about them was the greatest. And they were supposed to, like, never break up because they were real-life childhood friends. And that was where it kind of, like, real life comes into the kayfabe world and is and actually, like, feels like that's just, we're not even going to pretend like they're not real-life friends forever.
Yeah.
Then... not only does he turn on him, but he hits him in the damn head with a chair, steel chair, and then the solo concerto.
Yeah.
Which people, they don't do this anymore.
No.
But a chair on the ground, put your head on it, and smash your head in between two chairs.
Which, of course, was their despicable tag team finish.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what they did when they were heels, right? Yeah. But this was just like... this was just so brutal. Like, it looked so brutal. It looked like he was just killing Edge. I felt like, how? They're best friends. This can't be. And this is, of course, also kind of towards the end of me being like a kid who liked wrestling.
Yeah.
Where I still had a lot of, it's still real to me, damn it, like inside me, you know?
Well,
even though I knew it was fake. But like, it was just, you still didn't get moments like that. So I don't know. That was the only other one, because even with like Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, I liked the Rockers, but sure. I didn't grow up necessarily watching them as much. And like, I had been watching Edge and Christian for a while, right? So, yeah, huge moment, huge moment.
Yeah,
despicable,
you know,
heel turn.
That I mean,
I want to look this up and figure out what actually that match was, because I just remember it.
Those two were always overachieving in my mind, because like they were never really my favorites, even when they were part of that tag team division, where it was like I always kind of like the Dudleys more, I like the Hardys more,
sure.
I like the APA more, right? But they were just always doing that extra thing, that extra little, you know, be it the comedy or you know, going out of their way to do the big spots and the big matches. Like, they were just so good.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right that it always felt like they were higher up than they're supposed to be, because together they were greater than the sum of their parts or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, they just kind of had that feeling to them. Then you're like, you're breaking it up, man. What are you doing?
I know. Well, nothing gets built up so it can't be destroyed.
Exactly. All right, now I got a real life one.
Give me the real one.
This is when wrestling and real life, I when you can compare real life and use wrestling terms, it really puts, like, it makes things a lot more interesting. And it's funny to think through things that have happened in my life and then be like, oh, that was just a heel turn. Like, that, you know, whatever. So as a kid, I grew up with a single parent, right?
Yeah.
It was just me and my mom. I'm an only child.
Oh my
single
God.
Mom.
Dude, we're going deep.
Oh, we're going deep, dude. never had like a true like father figure, right?
Yeah.
And my mom had like, she'll have like boyfriends and stuff, and they were always fine, but they're temporary.
Yeah.
And then finally there's this guy who comes along who my mom is like, we're going to get married. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. At the time, I'm a kid with a dog, right?
Oh, Jesus.
My dog's name is Red. I love this dog. He's the best. Like, he's my childhood dog, right? And I had him for probably 4 or 5 years at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're, you know, he's my best buddy.
Sure.
Stepdad moves in. Turns out, stepdad's allergic to dogs.
Oh, no.
Yes. And he originally tried to say, like, I'll tough it out. I'll just take, like, allergy meds or something like that, and it'll be fine. But then living in the house with the dog, it was like a chow with long hair, right? Living in the house with the dog, he realized that it wasn't going to work out, right? So I get explained that the dog has to go.
Oh, no.
And I was like, you know what? F this guy. I'm never gonna like this guy. Screw
so that was
forever,
it.
Right?
He was persona non grata with you from
yeah.
From
that was it. That was it. He was a heel to me from then. I'm not gonna listen to a word you say, stupid stepdad. Now cut to like me as an adult. Me and him are totally fine. He's a great guy. I totally understand now that at the time. But at the time,
at the time,
my dog, right?
Despicable heel turn. A hopeless heel turn. Where did the dog go?
My mom took him to a non-kill shelter, so the dog went to another home, and it was fine. I'm sure the dog lived a very happy life, but that didn't matter to me at the time. That was my play buddy, right? Like I'd take him outside, we would throw the ball around, and then suddenly couldn't do that. So, yeah, heel turn. It was hard to recover from that one. I actually give him a lot of credit. He put in lots of hours to turn face again.
That was a slow build,
yeah,
to the face turn.
Slow build to becoming face one more time. Yeah, pretty insane. But that's my real life, hopeless, despicable heel turn. I was trying to think of like if there's anything else, and I don't think there's ever been another situation in my life where somebody like actually like turned on me, and I was like, I'll never be your friend again. Like it doesn't really happen if you're not. I think it happens a lot more to people who are assholes themselves, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Wait, hold on. You were in music. You never got kicked out of a band?
No, I actually never did. I never got kicked out of a band myself, personally. Although I'll say that all my ex-girlfriends, huge heel turns, dude.
Huge heel turns. Massive heel turns.
Yes.
Yeah, dude. I definitely the one big one. I've talked about this on some of the other podcasts before, but got kicked out of my sketch comedy troupe, and they are all still heels. They left me laying, unexpected, blindsided, spray painting the name of the comedy troupe on my back, you know, just leaving me for security to scoop up and bring to the back, lick my wounds. I didn't realize I was walking into a Loser Leaves Town match, and man, I got screwed out of my position. But other than that, I think that might have been the only time that that anything like that happened.
I quit a band one time where at the end they had turned heel before, and then that's why I quit.
So you left, yeah.
But I ultimately was the one.
So you were like, you were like, hey man, I can't be a part of this. Like we can't keep doing all this dirt, you know. Like I got a conscience here. I gotta walk away.
Exactly. Oh, I remember our last show I played with them. We hadn't practiced the song in like 2 years, and they just decided that we should just play it on stage at this show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I don't remember it. Like, don't do it. And all of a sudden the drummer just kicked into it. And then I just looked like an idiot being like, I don't remember the friggin' song, dude. Like, what do you want me to do here? I was like, if we'd have just practiced it one time or give me a second, tell me what the opening chord is, I'm on board. But then they just started playing it. And I was like, screw you guys. Like, I look like the idiot on stage who doesn't remember the song. But this is like a song we haven't played in 2 years, and you're just jumping me with it. They gave me a concerto right there, right?
Oh, dude, I'll tell you what. We say this every week, man, but what other wrestling podcast are you going to get personal trauma, real-life heartbreak, and fantasy Oscar booking? Nowhere else. Nowhere else will you get this. Patreon.com/1900 wrestling. Let's go ahead and get to our melodica challenge for the week. Let's play last week's Oh, wait. No, here was last week's. Did you get that one, Willie?
Yeah, I know who this is.
Who is it?
This is Big Red, right?
That's gotta be Kane. Yeah, I think that's definitely Kane. Here we go. This is your
that one is good though because it's like remember I told you that the rhythms were throwing me off?
Yeah.
That one is like the rhythm has nothing to do with it. It's all about the melody, right?
Yeah, so. Well yeah, it's all about that dirge. Like just the
He didn't go into wow, 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 but, you know, I don't need that, so.
All right. Well, then here we go. This is your Melodica challenge for this week. Of course, send us your guesses at Willie Dills and at Justin R. Young on Twitter with what you think the Melodica challenge is. All right, one more
That's
time.
That's a good one, man.
One more time. That one is great. I love that one. I definitely am very, 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 very excited to see if you guys get it. Willie, what do you got coming up?
Mostly just check me out on my streaming a lot of Hearthstone, Willie Dill, twitch.tv/WillieDillsSF. Hopefully that name will change soon enough and then we'll cut the SF, but for now it's still there. If you are a fan of Hearthstone matches, I've been streaming and casting a lot of DHL, Dills Hearthstone League matches. So a bunch of those are also up on my YouTube as well. So you can find those live. And then you can check them out later on youtube.com/WillieDillsSF. Lots of good stuff.
Also, news that broke during the show, because apparently this is when all the news breaks for the Hall of Fame. Beth Phoenix will be inducted. Ooh. She will be the female inductee. She really had her peak after I was out. Like, it was in my dark period. Do you remember much of Beth Phoenix?
No. Well, no, I mean, like, to be honest, the female wrestling before, like, the current version of wrestling that I watch a lot more of is very much just it was lingerie matches and things like that. I don't remember a lot of the I remember, like, the triple threats at WrestleMania that seemed to happen every year.
Yeah.
But outside of that, there's not a lot of memorable names for me.
You know, I think
I'll have to look her up.
She was definitely more on the Amazon side. And I think she is the Mrs. Edge. If I'm not mistaken. I think she's married to Edge and the mother to his children. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out of my butt.
Okay, now I recognize her. Yeah, I just looked her up. Spouses Edge. Yep.
Yeah, look at that. She is Mrs. Copeland. Well, congratulations to Beth Phoenix. My name is Justin Robert Young. You can follow me at Justin R. Young on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. This week, I don't know if there's anything crazy going on this week. Certainly more and more on the Twitch channel now that we are partnered. Feel free to subscribe, twitch.tv/JustinR. Young and hopefully this week, Willie, let's put together me casting with you because
yeah, let's do it, man.
I'm excited.
I'm in. What I'll do is I'm putting together the times for this week's matches, so I'll hit you with all of them. You can tell me if one of them works for you.
Sounds like a plan. Until next time, my name is Justin. That is Willie. This has been 1-900 Wrestling.
I want you to call me World of Wrestling's latest news and views. I've been involved in wrestling for 35 years, and nobody knows wrestling like me. Remember the number 1-900 Wrestling.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.